Welcome to a new episode of the Bees and Honey podcast. It's spring in New York, and today I'm speaking with a young, fresh artist, Wildriana Paulino, who has just graduated from Cooper Union. Her solo exhibition, her graduation exhibition, was extremely gratifying to see. I will have a video up of this on YouTube, so be sure to check out the Bees and Honey channel on YouTube to see what she's talking about. But I hope you enjoy this interview with her. She's an amazing young artist, and I really look forward to seeing more of her work in the future. Hi, so here we are today with Wildriana Paulino, who is an artist who recently graduated from Cooper Union. Tell us a little bit about your experience as a student there, how it helped you develop, or what did you learn at Cooper Union?
I would say that at Cooper Union, I learned everything that I know today as an artist, when it comes to skills, but especially when it comes to criticism. The most important thing that I learned at Cooper, besides just being hard at work, is to be self-critical, to question every decision in art making, not only in the context of materials, but also in social context, historical context, in context of gender, ethnicity and race. Mm-hmm. And all of that, I think, has well informed my work in the fact that I don't think that I will be producing the amount of work I'm producing right now if I was self-critical.
Yeah. And like, would you say that in terms of the education, because now Cooper Union used to be free for students, now students have to pay. Would you say it's one of the best universities for arts in New York City?
I would say so. I even say that it's one of the best universities for art in the country. Mm-hmm. Its curriculum is incredible. You can see that the faculty that they have in the art school, they really do enjoy teaching. They don't do it because they need the job. They actually do it out of their own desire to share knowledge. And something that I always love about Cooper Union is how the faculty in classes, they don't make you feel like a professor-student
relationship.
Everyone is equal and everyone is learning. Mm-hmm. We just have different amounts of experiences. So that's something that I really did enjoy at Cooper.
Yeah, and would you say you had a favorite? I know you just finished preparing and you just took down your graduation exhibition. Was there some part of the process that really was the favorite for you? Like, for example, I know you learned casting. Mm-hmm. Like, that seemed quite challenging to me. What would you say was your favorite part of this process?
I would say, yes, it was casting, bronze casting and paper making. I realized that I am inclined towards the three-dimensional design, which includes sculpture, and I didn't know that you could actually make paper with so many things. And when I found out about that, I began to experiment. Paper making right now, I would say, is one of my most important materials in the practice. And bronze casting, I was intimidated by it in the beginning. It's very tough, a lot of physical labor.
Yeah.
My hands are messed up because of that, but it's something that I really do enjoy.
Yeah. And then in terms of, you're really the first student that I've ever interviewed for the podcast, by the way. So I feel very happy about that. And you, last summer you did an internship with an artist. Which one was he? I think he was a Pace Gallery artist, an African-American artist.
Oh, it actually does. I did two internships. One is with George Nelson Preston. He's an African-American artist and he's also an art historian. From my experience with him, which I am continuing my experience with him, mm-hmm. I just learned so much because his house is basically a museum for African art. And with dealing with all of the information and the inventory of the works and doing research, this exposure to African art really did influence my work, especially when it came to maternity figures, a theme that is very common in a lot of African sculptures. And one of my pieces is actually called maternity figure because of the relationship that I began to make with maternity life and prepare.
Well, that gets into another question which I had there. What would you say were the themes in your graduation exhibition? And does your background from the Dominican Republic influence your work?
Yes. The themes of my exhibitions, there are many. Alienation, memory, some of the ones that you mentioned. Rebirth and death, violence, and but there's also resilience on it. I would say that my experience in the Dominican Republic really did influence my work, because in the Dominican Republic, living in the Caribbean, you are constantly just exposed to nature. So I grew up in an area that it was suburban, but at the same time, there was a lot of just nature around me, and I spent a lot of time in the countryside. So this connection to nature and being and spending a lot of time in the mountains and the rivers influenced my work in the way that I use material, and also influenced my work in the way that I see the female experience, because a lot of my work is related to the female experience, specifically to violence. And that was violence that unfortunately I witnessed growing up
in Dominican Republic. And we still see violence now. I mean, if we look at the past week in America, it's ridiculous with these white supremacist shootings of African Americans, and I mean, it's non-stop with the violence, it seems. But the title of your exhibition was Para Nunca Escoger,
is that how you,
Escocé, and that means to never ache.
It's a loose translation. I can dig into that. So Escocer means sting. And
sting?
Sting.
Sting.
Yeah. It's like when a burn stings your body. But I took the liberty to translate it into never ache.
Right.
I can talk about the provenance of the title.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So the title, To Never Ache, in and of itself is, I always see my art making process as a ritual. Because for me, just in the process is what I enjoy the most, and in the process is when I feel that I'm cleansing something that is hurting me. So just the process for all of my art practice is ritualistic cleansing and letting go of the pain, or trying to let it go of the pain. But the word Escocer is very special to me, because in the last 3 years, I never heard of it until 3 years ago, and in the last 3 years it just began to appear everywhere. And I researched the song, and it means sting, but it's very specific. And there is a song by a Spanish artist called Bebe, and the song is called Escuece, and I really do enjoy the song. And then the other day, running through books, I found a book by Brazilian artist and writer Manuel Araujo, and the book is called Para Nunca Escuecer Negras Memorias, it's in Portuguese. So there is, of course, a huge difference in terms of where we are focusing with the word, but in all of the contexts that I heard the word is always goes back to the idea of memory and of this idea of cleansing through making this. In the song it goes that way, and in the book of Emmanuel Araujo, it also goes that way. So I found it proper to also utilize it for my exhibition.
Wow. Well, I think I'm glad I asked about that, because I didn't know any of that. Could you open this for me again? Because I can't remember the questions. But let's go back again to the themes. You know, the main piece in the exhibition, the huge spiral sculptural installation with papers. Tell us about that work. What's its title and how you made it, and what is it about? I mean, I know you have many spirals throughout the exhibition, which I correlated to the Fibonacci sequence and the golden ratio, but what was your thinking?
My thinking specifically with this big spiral installation, which title is Maternity Figure, is again, the title is again inspired by my exposure to African art, and but the piece itself, I see this piece more as a refuge honor that is made of a multiplicity of happenings. And I define the happenings into compositions. So each paper is a different composition. You have pieces of body, you have pieces of hair and wood and strings that are just compiled into this spiral. So for me, it becomes just a depiction of a synchronous moment in life, just how I define the spiral, because you mentioned the relationship to the Fibonacci golden spiral, and it's in the back of my head, but I wasn't really thinking about it. I was thinking in the spirals in terms that predate him more. Indigenous cultures, how the spiral is a symbol of continuity and it becomes basically life itself. Also, the spiral as a model of thought, because it's a model of thought that prevails against the linear rationale of the European mode of thinking that was imposed into our hemisphere 400 years ago. So that idea that everything's just convoluted, it's happening at the same time, it's something that I have been very attracted to. And also the resemblance of the spiral to the umbilical cord, to the womb of the woman, and having all of these organic materials for me is also just a way to connect back to earth, but at the same time just give back autonomy to women. A lot of my work, I would say, when it comes to themes of violence, I go back to using a lot of organic materials, because for me earth is autonomous. So giving that autonomy to women that is stripping away from them through the act of violence. The making of this spiral was tough when it comes to the formal aspects. Mm-hmm. I think I made like 150 sheets of paper. It was 6 months of making paper, sewing it together. Some of them are sewn by hand. Some of them, I had my little tricks. And then the installation process, wow. I'm also very grateful for the technicians at Cooper Union, because without them, I wouldn't have been able to make this spiral happen. They were the ones who helped me twist the metal and hang it and gave me all of the tools and knowledge that I needed in order to make it happen. I really do appreciate them, because they have crazy students come here. Hey, I have this idea, something crazy, and so how they make it happen.
Wow, amazing. Well, what you said reminded me of what I heard once. There are no straight lines in nature. So to correlate that to the earth and women and the umbilical cord. So some of your work is conceptual, some is figurative, and some is abstract. Would you say you have one particular language, or it depends on what you're working on at the time?
I would say it depends on what I'm working on at the time. Each work has its needs. Sometimes a work needs more figurative language, sometimes more abstract, sometimes more conceptual. So it depends on the work.
Yeah. Let's see what else I had here. I was asking about the series of small sculptures that line the wall. Would you say your work is you answered this question already about the theme of your work. Let me just see if there's something that I didn't ask you that I have on my list here. What are the materials you're using in addition to paper? There was plaster, was there copper in the exhibition as well? Like, what were the works etched on? There was a series of etched works that looked like they were on copper. What was it, copper?
They were copper plates, mm-hmm. and that I used for etching. Mm-hmm. And the copper plates are the matrix of the plaster etchings that mm-hmm. I have beside them. The color of the copper plate, it's oxidation, just because I am very interested in letting things be. Just, again, going back to this idea of autonomy, just letting nature and things become what they want to become. And I like to let metal oxidize and let paper wrinkle if it wants to wrinkle.
I really liked those words as well. So now you have finished.
finished at school, what are your plans for the future? You just got in a studio space uptown, so that's a completely different neighborhood. What do you think you're going to do for the next few months or year even?
For the next few months, I survive. Nah, that's for the rest of the life. Well, for the next few months, I want to keep working on my sculptural paper making practice. Mm-hmm. I have these pieces that were made out of pulp and they protrude off of the wall. Mm-hmm. I became very interested in those pieces and now I would like to expand on them and just keep working on works that do not demand a lot of expensive materials like bronze, because unfortunately right now I don't have access to the shop anymore. Mm-hmm. But I am figuring things out as things come. I'm preparing my portfolio to apply to grad school, mm-hmm. hopefully by next year, and play the residency game.
Right. Well, that's a good game if you can get it. I know a lot of artists are constantly moving around to residencies. Some of them don't like to do the paperwork, but you know, that's part of everyone's life. I don't think anyone likes to do paperwork. But do you want to mention which schools you're thinking of for graduate school or not really?
Yes. The three schools at the top of my head are Yale School of Art, Columbia, and Hunter. I think so far, as per my understanding, those three schools really fit into what I am trying to work with when it comes to art. But from the time that I begin to apply to school, maybe other schools will pop out. I'm thinking that if I have the opportunity, I may want to go abroad as well.
Yeah, no, I think you have a very good grasp of how things might work. Those schools are good in the Northeast, and like you said, abroad there are many opportunities as well. But you should also keep in mind, you know, just making some contacts.
I guess
through the residencies you could find these curators or any other people in the art world who would be happy to show your work, and you know, that's one form too. I always say if I never figured out what to do with life, I would go back to school. So school is a good refuge and it's great to learn and make contacts and stuff. But I think for yourself, if something else came up, you don't really need school. I mean, you know,
if something comes up in the way, I mean, I won't say no.
Right.
So far, that's my plan, but I'm happy and open to the surprises of life.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, as an artist, not just to survive, because New York right now, it takes a lot to survive in New York. I mean, just financially, it takes a lot to survive. So, you know, to get to the next stage of surviving, which I guess would be called thriving. So it's something to think about and put into your work as well. Anyway, thank you for taking the time to come and talk about your practice and your plans and how it was for you at school for the last four years. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Nicolette. Yeah. This was a very amazing experience.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Stop.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Bees and Honey podcast. I hope you learned a little bit about Wildriana's process as an artist, and I hope you get a chance to look at the YouTube video and see the wonderful work that this young artist in New York is producing. Enjoy the week. Bye.